Coming to you on some serious tape delay via a podcast near you. From that hockey hotbed of San Jose, California, it's Dudes on Hockey.
He is now accepting callers. He is calling me Dude.
And now, your hosts, Mike and Doug.
Hey there, and welcome to Dudes on Hockey Podcast. I'm Mike, that's Doug.
Dude, we survived our trip to Vegas.
We did.
How'd you think we did?
Not great. I did great before you got there.
Whoa! Hey now.
Yeah, I made two bets on Friday, won them both. Then you rolled into town.
Yeah.
Went a little downhill.
I'd like to make sure the listeners understand that when Mike says he bet on a hockey game, he bet $20.
I didn't know what I was doing. I mean, I just bet 20 bucks.
If you're going to lose, you lose $100 like I did. You lose $100.
Yes, you did. I'll give you that. You, sir, lost a real bet.
If you're going to lose, you lose some real cold hard cash.
Yeah.
Like Michael Jordan and Pete Rose
and Charles Barkley.
Wow, dude. Well, yeah, betting on hockey was not outstanding for us, but we had a good time. We found a pretty cool place, actually, in the Palazzo Hotel. They have a pretty unique sports bar there called Legacy's Stadium,
mm-hmm.
which is like underground, basically,
yeah.
at the Palazzo. We walked by some really trendy club. We thought about going in there and then thought better of it. No, we were never going to go in. No, we were never going to go in there. It was actually pretty funny to walk by and see the people who were hanging out there. It was really like an episode of the Jersey Shore.
Yeah.
I mean, it was weird. But Legacy Stadium, they had like regular dining room set up. And then they had this cool kind of like stadium seating, like bleachers with right. giant TVs. And it was fun. The food was good, of course.
Yeah.
Bam, bam. Had some hot wings. Bam.
It was good.
And we watched the Devils completely give it up to the Islanders.
Yes.
And then we saw the Maple Leafs win
mm-hmm.
Over the hapless Senators, right?
Yes.
So we won one, lost one there. So it was an okay. I think we won about 500, which means that you lost.
Yeah.
And I even started playing college basketball, which I know nothing about.
Yeah, that was.
I was so bored at the end. I was betting the under on the Arizona-Utah game. Waiting for our flight. I was like, I'll take the under.
Lost.
Yeah.
Needless to say.
But we had a good time. It was a good trip, too.
It was
thank
great.
You. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you for paying up.
And the way things are going, you're going to be enjoying it again next year.
I don't know. You have more teams, I think, in the playoffs right now. I have the two best teams, but you have more teams in the dance. But we're a long ways away from that. Speaking of a long ways away, the Sharks finally off the schneid, dude, with a win in St. Louis,
mm-hmm.
of all places,
right,
where the curse began. The Sharks win. How do you feel now after the Sharks have stopped this wretched 7-game losing streak?
I'll be honest. I really don't feel that much better.
Uh-huh.
I really don't at all. They only scored 2 goals. St. Louis was operating under the worst possible conditions. They had a rookie goaltender in net. They had just flown into town at 6 o'clock that morning. The Sharks, to their credit, took advantage of circumstances in their favor, and they won a game in a place where they hadn't won it since 2010 or something. They had lost 8 of 9 against St. Louis. All the games against St. Louis on the road last year they lost. They got worked in the playoffs, and they managed to squeak one out. But they basically showed not a lot in that game that I was excited about. They certainly didn't show much of an offensive spark. I thought the Blues completely dominated the first half of the game. And the Sharks did well in fits and starts the second half. Enough to win on basically a completely fluky goal by Tim Kennedy that never should have gone in. And that was enough to give them a win. So when you're on a 7-game losing streak, you take the win however you can get it. And the Sharks deserve credit for gutting it out, and that game could have gotten out of hand the way the Blues were dominating at times. So to that, I say good for you. But in terms of how the team looks, they look the same. I have no confidence that they're going to go get anywhere close to Chicago tomorrow night. They're going to get worked, and I don't have any confidence in the next stretch at all. So I don't know. What do you think? You have a completely different take on this than me?
No, I don't actually, and I feel bad that I don't. I'd love to argue with you, but I was happy that they won. I thought that they had about a 10-minute stretch there that they looked pretty good, pretty dominant, fairly physical, you know. I thought some guys who haven't looked that good in a while, like our good friend Dan Boyle, looked really good in that game.
He looked really good.
And I thought Tommy Wingles played a good game. Niemi, again, good. Defensively strong. And it was enough to get a win over a team, like you said, that was playing in just one of the most miserable circumstances you could possibly play under for a team that was having a home game. So I still don't put a lot of stock in this yet, dude. And I think there was something that I heard Drew Remenda on KNBR talking about. And, you know, maybe we want to do some emails before we get too deep into this, but I'm going to throw it out now. As you know, Remenda said, basically, this team is big. The Sharks are big, but they're slow.
Mm-hmm.
And that this team is not going to win games by outscoring people. When's the last time that we thought of the Sharks as a defensive team?
Daryl Sutter. It's been a while.
Well, the Sharks analyst and, you know, a in-house guy is saying that the Sharks are not going to win games by outscoring people, and they're going to basically have to beat teams 2-1. Like the Kings and the Devils last year.
Right.
And that's how they're going to be successful. So as we look forward here, is this the right roster for even that kind of game plan? And is this the right coach for that kind of game plan? It's just really, I thought that was so interesting. But I know we've got a lot of emails, some tweet questions. Maybe we'll jump into that before we get into my question, dude.
Kevin says he wants to hear a few more minutes of us talking about Fantasy League. I think he's the only person ever who said that. No, we're doing okay in fantasy, aren't
we? Yeah, we're a playoff team.
We're winning this week.
Sure.
We're doing okay. I think we're in the middle. We're like 7 seed or so.
Yeah, I think we're the 7 seed.
But like 16 teams out of 20 make the playoffs or something.
Right.
Yeah.
So, yeah, we're doing fine. I like our roster. I think that we made some good pickups under the radar. You know, we got Zach Bogosian really early. We used our IR spot on him. I think that's going to pay off for us.
Mm-hmm.
I also picked up an injured Patrick Hornquist. I think that's going to pay off for us.
Yep. You know, I think I've drafted Patrick Hornquist in like the last 2 or 3 years of fantasy hockey. He's always one of those guys that I see as being under the radar. And
there's no one else on Nashville who's going to score. I mean, this guy on Nashville is a high 20 goal, 30 goal scorer.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't have a lot of other options, especially on the power play. So, you know, I like having Hornquist, and I think Bogosian's going to help. And you know, we have great goaltending, you know, Lundqvist and Crawford.
Mm-hmm.
And we have Marty Biron too, you know, as the handcuff. Rangers are going to get better. They're not going to stay, you know, where they are right now. So, I think long run, I like where we're set up, dude.
Yeah, I noticed that we lost all the goaltending stats last week because of Yevgeny Nabokov, which I thought was pretty funny. It's probably that damn game against the Devils.
Probably, dude, probably. We'll try and cover fantasy a little bit more for you, Kevin.
Yeah, we will. Not too much. okay, let's go to Eric. Eric said he listened to the latest podcast and was struck how quickly we dismissed the ability to trade the big boys. Jumbo has previously played in Switzerland for an extended period of time. I believe his wife's family lives there, and doesn't his family live in Ontario? Why would he turn down a trade to Toronto? Wouldn't Toronto move heaven and earth to get Phil Kessel, a top-flight center, to play with? Toronto's the 6th seed at the moment and would expect them to be aggressive. I'm not saying that this is the trade we should make or that would make us better, but it should be considered a possibility. Marleau doesn't seem to want to go anywhere to Europe to play during the lockout or to the net to score a goal. Nice. That's a good one. So if you can't move Patty, maybe move Joe and begin the rebuild around Pavs, Logan, Vlasic, Burns, and Braun. And to think the Sharks are the best team in the Bay Area for a little while.
Good email. Good email.
Definitely. I guess, you know, I don't know what's in Joe's head. Clearly, he's got ties here. He's been here a while. I believe he owns a home here. And, you know, this is me playing pop psychologist and not knowing the man at all, clearly, off the ice. But Toronto is an extremely high-pressure market, and that's the kind of market that appeals to a certain kind of player. It appeals to players, I think, that really relish the spotlight, relish the fame, relish the adulation, from what I've seen from Joe Thornton in his public persona, the way he approaches, you know, community events and the way he interacts with the media, he doesn't seem to be that kind of guy to me. And that's a kind of system, and we've seen it many times before, that chews people up. Ron Wilson, you could say, was a casualty of that media scrutiny. Ron Wilson's a prickly guy anyway. You put him in there when you got 30 beat writers in the greater Toronto area. Yeah, you know, your capacity for enjoying your job can go down by a huge margin. I don't see Joe Thornton as being one of those guys that would really enjoy Toronto, frankly. Do you agree with that? Or do you think that, yeah, you know, he played for Sioux City, right? So he played for the Sault Ste. Marie Greyhounds in the OHL in junior. I don't know exactly where in Ontario he grew up, but certainly it's likely he grew up a Toronto fan. You think A, Joe would want to go to Toronto, and B, we should get anything out of Toronto? Is this a completely craziness, or does Eric have a point here?
Well, before even getting into, I do disagree with Eric that I think that these guys are immovable. Like, I don't think, even if we wanted to trade one of these guys, that there's a lot of teams out there looking to make high salary additions when the cap is going down. So that would mean the Sharks would then have to take equal salary in return. And what would that end up being? Mike Komisarek and...
Oh, God.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, like, do we want Mike Komisarek? Because like, that's what we're talking about.
What are you ending up taking here? I don't know. I think there's some teams that can take on salary, like Nashville and the Islanders, but there's reasons why they don't.
Right.
It's because they're not in it to spend the money. So you're not going to see a team like that make that kind of addition. And I think you've got a point on Marlow. Marlow's not going anywhere, because he doesn't want to.
No.
And, you know, there's been talk about, we don't know everything about everyone's no movement clauses, and that's probably true.
Mm-hmm.
But you've got to imagine that, you know, someone like Marlow's got some pretty good protection, because he doesn't want to go anywhere. So at least in season, it's not going to happen, even if they wanted it to happen. And I'm not sure, you know, if the Sharks continue to go down, you know, what's going to be the first to give, the coach or the players?
Right.
You know, we saw in Buffalo, it was the coach.
Clearly.
You know, and that roster is not perfect.
They got three really bad contracts right now, and they can't move it. They're not going to be able to move any of them.
And, you know, how Darcy Regier survived along, you know, with Lindy Ruff getting the axe. Mm-hmm. I don't know how he didn't get canned too, because he has as much blame for that in some of the decisions he's made as
Ville Leino, Christian Ehrhoff.
Yeah, those are some bad deals. And the extension to Tyler Myers looks really bad.
Yeah, it looks really bad, yeah.
You know, that might have just been too soon. And you look at, that's why teams like Montreal are hesitant to give a player like PK Subban that kind of money. What have you done? You've played 2 years.
Right.
You know, you don't get that contract. Myers plays 2 years, he gets the huge deal, and he can't perform. He's making like $10 million this year.
Better than 9 games. Oh, but we'll get to that later in the show. Let's get to Lore, who's talking about McClellan being on the hot seat, a topic we talked about last week. He always thought McClellan was a good enough coach until recently. Doesn't make excuses, is articulate, and like any good coach, has a demeanor of a perpetually constipated person. I love that. I love that line. Unfortunately, unlike a great coach, he hasn't given a team enough of an identity or imposed his system very thoroughly, in my opinion. So he goes on to make
I have something to say on that, but
okay.
We'll come back.
His question to the dudes is, if you're Doug Wilson, at what point does it become impossible to keep McClellan behind the bench and look like you know what you're doing? If the team stays around 500? And if Wilson pulled a move like Lombardi did last year when he hired Sutter to take over the Kings before entering the playoffs, wouldn't it be worth trying before doing a reshuffle of players? I hear Lindy Ruff is available, obviously. Oh, and Lore is now in Australia, where Doug Wilson Jr. helped the Melbourne Ice with their third championship in a row last season. Pretty cool. Following the Sharks from Australia. Good times.
Well, I think McClellan did impose his system on this team 4 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in his first year here, there was a very clear difference. I mean, you could see them. It was so much different than what we saw with Ron Wilson.
Yes.
I mean, there was a definite change, but I agree that lately that identity has become muddy.
Mm-hmm.
And
you know, frankly, I think Doug Wilson's the one who may have muddied it a bit with him talking about how he wants the players to get more truculent or whatever.
But that's phrasing. Not even happening. And this was a bit of a discussion that I had with, you know, our friends at Fear the Fin and Andy Bench, you know, hope I'm saying that right.
Yeah.
That, you know, I threw out there after a loss, I was a little bitter. I think it was after a Chicago loss. Mm-hmm. And I said, you know, didn't Doug Wilson say that this team was going to play harder? And isn't the team motto like tougher, faster, stronger,
better, whatever,
better, yeah, whatever. And how does this team embodying that at all when they're in the bottom third in block shots and hits, which to me are things that give you at least an indication? Well, I do understand those stats are flawed, okay?
Yes.
And people who keep track of them, sometimes they're homers, they pad them, they're not perfect. But they do tell you something.
Mm-hmm.
They tell you something. It's not something that I think you can dismiss. So I disagree with them, you know, where, you know, their responses back to me were, you know, you can't really learn anything, judge this team based on the fact that they're in the bottom third. I disagree with that, dude. What do you think? I mean, don't you see their play reflects a lack of physicality?
There's no doubt about that in my mind. I mean, the difference in physicality was nowhere more stark than against the Blues. The Blues hit every frigging thing that moved in that game all game long. David Backes, I mean, even Andy McDonald's like hitting people. Of course, you see guys like Scott Nickel and these guys run around and Barrett Jackman hits everybody. But it seemed like with Ken Hitchcock, that's how they play. That's what you do. And then something good hopefully will happen because of it. And the Sharks don't play that style. I'm not necessarily saying that they have to hit as much as the Blues do, but there's a certain lack of physicality, and that seems to go directly against what Doug Wilson said he wanted to make this team into last year, and it goes against the kind of personnel that they seem to pick up.
This team is big and slow, and Drew said it himself that they're going to wear down people physically. If that's going to be the identity of this team, then let it be the identity of this team. And to answer your question, Lore, then I don't think Todd McClellan is the right coach for this team if that's the identity of this team. And I don't think we're interested in Lindy Ruff. I think the next head coach could be sitting or standing feet away from Todd McClellan. And I don't think it's going to be too much longer if the losing streak continues, dude. I mean, how much rope do you give McClellan? And this isn't an indictment against him as being a bad coach. Because I'll tell you what, if he gets fired, he will have another job next year. There's no doubt about that. He will have another head coaching job in this league within a year.
I don't know if I go that far, but I think he will have another head coaching job. I just can't say when.
Oh, I think he would have one and have one very quickly.
But you're right. But this is an important point. And if we're trying to, if the Sharks are trying to remake this team as a large and slow team, then McClellan's puck possession Detroit style, which is the system that he instituted after he came over from Detroit, it's not going to work so well.
I mean, don't you think of Detroit and the good Detroit teams as being fast?
Yeah. They were quick in the neutral zone, quick in transition, puck possession, moving the puck quickly around to all the skill players in the periphery.
And you just don't see that.
You just
right
don't
now.
See that. Yeah.
No, you don't see that from this team. Now, you did see it in the first seven games when they won seven in a row.
Right.
So, you know, I think what some people's points are, is this an aberration, like what's been happening, or is this the real Sharks? Jamie Baker made an interesting point where he said, basically, the Sharks won the first seven games as if they were seven preseason games, where all the other teams had no idea what they were doing, including the Sharks. And they just happened to win all seven of those preseason games.
Right.
And now the real season has begun, and they're 1-7.
Right.
That didn't make me feel very good hearing that from Jamie Baker either.
No, certainly not. Certainly not.
Who followed us on Twitter, by the way?
Oh, finally.
Thank you.
It's about friggin' time. Because we have so many pithy things to say.
So what do you think? I mean, of course, they're going to beat the Blackhawks tomorrow, and they're going to go on a wild winning streak, and all of this will be moot.
But I'd take the friggin' puck line on the Blackhawks if I could.
we're not sold based on one win. We're not sold that this is going to be turned around. And I do fear that we're headed for darker times. What? How much more rope do you give McClellan if they lose the next 4 out of 5?
If I'm the GM, I give him another 15 games. Doug Wilson, I can't imagine Doug Wilson fires him in the middle of the season.
So then this would then be just a lost season?
Yes.
Okay.
I think he's going to see what's what. He's going to try and get a bead on some of these guys we've brought in. Get a bead on Tim Kennedy. Get a bead on Gomez, who's already in the doghouse. Get a bead on some of these younger players.
What? Where's the excitement on Scott Gomez all of a sudden from everybody?
Right.
I mean, Scott Gomez was... Some people were so excited for him to be around. He's already vanished.
Yeah. He's already gone. With TJ Gagliardi.
At least Gagliardi, it looks like he's going to play tomorrow night. I mean, allegedly. Scott Gomez is just, it's like he doesn't even exist. You know, will he get sent down at some point? It's very possible.
It's very possible.
I mean, you know, they've clearly seen enough. I mean, he can drop pass his way, you know, through a game, but can't really do anything else. So that's looks like a total bust, you know. I guess no real risk, but unfortunate, you know.
Just the bottom two lines of this team, to me, are a complete shambles. The only bright spot, and he's been in for 2 games, so you can't say anything about it, is Tim Kennedy.
I like this guy.
I like him. Yeah. I like him a lot. He's hitting Barrett Jackman. He's hitting Ryan Reeves. It's like, if you have any...
He scored 2 goals. I mean, the guy, he's in and around... He seems like he's just everywhere.
Right.
I love the gaps in his teeth. I think that's the best part about
him. He's really
got
that summer teeth. You know, summer in and summer out.
He looks like a... I mean, he looks like a crazy rat.
Yeah.
I mean, with the hair.
Yeah.
I know they had the Crazy Rats line in Worcester. He could have been on that for sure. He's a keeper.
He's an interesting wild card because he played, I think, almost all 82 games for Buffalo 1 year, and then he took the Sabres to salary arbitration. And apparently, this really sort of soured him in the eyes of the Sabres, and the Sabres either released him or they basically...
They walked away from the arbitration.
They just shipped him. Yeah, they just said, okay, you're out.
They let him go.
I think maybe other teams took that as a bad sign, that this guy's a malcontent, he's a troublemaker, and he sort of had to... rebuild his standing in the eyes of hockey men.
He looks like an NHL player to me.
Yeah, he does. He
certainly a lot more than some of the other guys we've had auditioning for the bottom six. I mean, he's going to be around.
I hope so. I mean, I really hope he keeps. And, you know, but again, we've seen guys in the minor leagues get really excited and play really energetically for a few games and then they tail off. It's certainly not, wouldn't be the first time. So
the bottom six of this team is depressing. When you look at... Mm-hmm. what the bottom six has been like on teams that have won the cup. And this is, I keep going back to this point, dude, that you don't look at teams that have been successful in the last couple of years and see guys who are not physical, not able to, you know, chip in, you know, dirty goals and get their hands dirty. LA had, you know, guys like Nolan and Clifford and, you know, Richardson, Westgarth, you know what I mean?
Right.
These were the guys who were playing. Stoll. I mean, Stoll, one of the best defensive centers, is playing third line minutes for them.
Right.
We don't have anybody like that. You know, we don't have any, Boston, best bottom six in the league.
Probably. Yeah.
I mean, just dominant, physical. They can score. They're fast. You know, that's, and they know their role. I mean, guys like Gregory Campbell, they know what they're supposed to do.
Right.
They're not thinking that they're something that they're not. Mm-hmm. New Jersey, I mean, they've got a bunch of guys that nobody used to want. You know, Steve Bernier is thriving there.
Yeah.
The lesser Gianta, Gawala, you know, these guys, they understand what they're supposed to do. Ryan Carter, I mean, how many teams has that guy been on?
Right.
And they get it. And they play the role perfectly. And the Sharks just have, the, you know, with Gomez and Shepard on the bottom six, it's just not good enough. It's not good enough.
Yeah.
And I don't know. It's just hard to defend at this point. Watch the win 4 straight.
I know.
And this, what I think some people don't or misunderstand is it doesn't, mean I'm not a fan and that I'm not rooting for these guys.
Right.
I have not thrown in the towel.
Not even.
And I watch every game. And, you know, if James Shepherd scores 10 goals in the next 7 games, I'm going to be ecstatic for him. Now, he won't because he's on IR. Mm-hmm. But, you know, if some of these guys that we're critical of step up and play great, like Patrick Marleau, I'm as happy as anybody when Patrick Marleau scores a goal.
Right.
I don't have it in for the guy. I just think that we've seen it play out already. We know what's going to happen. I know how this book ends. I've seen the ending, dude.
I know.
We've read it before.
I know.
Like, and I just don't think that there's anything different right now.
I want to believe in the Detroit model of the third and fourth line. I want to believe in the faster, more skilled third and fourth line. And I think that maybe when you have Shepherd and you have Gomez and you have Kennedy and you have these guys, it seems like that's what you're going for. The problem is that it's just not working. And I would rather try and build a team with that model than build a, you know, let's see if we can find 6 Jay McClements and put them on the bottom 6. And right. then they just sit there and they take neutral zone draws and win them and defensive zone draws and win them. And they skate it to the red line and they chip it in and then they go in for line change. I really don't want to see a bottom 6 just do that all day. But if that's what you got to do to win, then I guess they got to do that. But I'm not happy about it.
Let me run this bottom 6 by you from the 07-08 Wings, okay?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Darren McCarty.
Uh-huh. Okay.
All right. Darren McCarty. I mean, the guy could play a little bit, but we knew what he was there to do, to beat the crap out of Claude Lemieux.
And mismanage his money. Oh.
A young Darren Helm.
Mm-hmm.
One of the fastest guys in the NHL.
Mm-hmm.
Great penalty killer. And can score a clutch goal. Kurt Maltby.
Yep.
Really good defensive forward.
Yep.
Knew exactly what he was supposed to do. Dallas Drake, the grizzled veteran.
I forgot about Dallas Drake.
The token old guy.
Yeah.
All right. At the end of his career. I mean, that guy was a 50, 60 point player when he was, you know, in his prime. But he was around, you know, and he knew what he was, the role he was supposed to play. This is the key here. Chris Draper. We don't have a Chris Draper.
It's true. We don't have a Dave Bolin. We don't have Chris Draper.
We don't have a Chris Draper. I mean, that's, you know, when the Ducks had our number and they had Paulson and Moen and Niedermeyer, just killing us, you know. And then to round it out, a slightly underpaid Yuri Hudler. I mean, that was their bottom six.
Yeah.
I mean, they had a great mix of skill and defensive forwards who knew exactly what they were doing. And, you know, and of those guys, I mean, how many of those guys were young players there? Two out of the 6, Hudler and Helm. The rest of those guys were veteran guys in their, you know, mid-30s to late-30s. And I don't know, maybe the Sharks do have that same formula, but it's not, you know, when you're comparing, you know, Michael Hanzus to Chris Draper, it's a little depressing.
Yeah. Do we have a Twitter question, dude? Because I don't have that in
front of me. We do. Twitter question was also having to do with trades. And it was thrown out there, dude. And here it is from Dylan. Boyle and Demers names have been mentioned in trade rumors. Who do we even target if these rumors are true? He might have been getting this from Kevin Kurz, who was answering in his mailbag, saying that he has heard that Dan Boyle's name is potentially the one that's being floated around the most. And, you know, he seemed to agree that that would be a huge mistake unless they're able to replace him with a player that has the same skill set that he does. But of the guys that are the veterans, I would think Dan Boyle is the most attractive of any of those guys.
Absolutely. Yeah. I think we've seen this year what happens when Dan Boyle's not in the lineup. The whole offense and breakout suffers. The power play suffers as if it could suffer any more than it's currently suffering. But yeah, I mean, that would just be a heartbreaker to see Dan Boyle traded. I would hate to see it. My understanding, which may not be accurate, of his no movement is not like he can provide a list of teams. I don't know how many, but the number 8 comes to mind for some reason of the number of teams that he does not want to go to. That's my understanding of his no movement clause. It could be completely wrong. But that I sort of remember reading something along those lines. So he might have there might be more latitude in trading Dan Boyle than, say, trading Patrick Marleau, who probably has a complete no movement, which says he has to okay every single trade that happens. For instance, if this is something we talked about earlier today, the New York Rangers wanted Dan Boyle because they wanted an elite puck mover to help the power play, and they wanted to make a run. Well, that would obviously make a lot of sense. John Tortorella coached Boyle when Boyle won the Cup in Tampa, and you know that would make sense from a Ranger standpoint. And that could be a piece that they would want to build a Cup winning team. Who would we get in return for that? I mean, when you trade a guy like that, you want to get something you can kind of build around, something that you can use for a few years. Like, you don't want to trade Boyle and get a guy that you're going to have for a year and see leave, because we might as well just have Boyle for another year and see him leave.
Totally agree with you. That would be such a huge mistake. And I think trading Boyle is a mistake anyways.
Yeah.
And if you're trading Boyle, then you're throwing in the towel to me. That means you're quitting. That you think the season is done, and that you have no chance to win, and maybe you'll make the playoffs, but you're not really a serious Cup contender if you're going to trade, to me, the MVP of this team. Because when he's not here, we see what happens. They're even more anemic offensively.
Well, Niemi's the MVP, although Thomas Greiss has been great, but Niemi's the MVP right
well,
now.
Well, he is right now, but I think, you know, of the last few years, you know, the person who's changed the identity of this team along with McClellan's system is Dan Boyle. You know what I mean? He's been the guy who...
Yeah, the Sharks have never had a puck mover the likes of Dan Boyle before.
And if he were to go, what I floated out to you, I said, because Rangers makes the perfect sense. Mm-hmm. He goes to New York. Would a package of Michael Delzato and Brian Boyle be satisfactory to you? Because in return, you get a young puck mover who we've seen play. And when he's good, he's pretty damn good. Mm-hmm. And he's pretty slick with his skates, too. Mm-hmm. A young puck mover and a legitimate
bottom
third
six player.
Line center.
Bottom six player. Mm-hmm.
And they're both signed. You know, they're both signed for another year and under reasonable deals. Is that acceptable? Is that the kind of return that you would, if it happened, you could go?
I could see that.
Okay.
Yeah. I'm sure the Rangers would never, ever do that. Delzato's playing a lot. He's fourth among defensemen. They have four guys at the top. I checked this out today. They have four guys at the top in terms of ice time that are all grouped together in terms of the, and it's Girardi, McDonough.
Stahl
and... Fourth is Delzato, and then they have Strahlman, which is well down, and then a couple other guys.
See, I think they might do that. I think that they might do it because Boyle now is better than Delzato, and Boyle can help you win a cup now more than Delzato, and those other three guys are all relatively young.
Yes, yes.
And you can still recover from losing a player like that. I don't want this to happen.
No.
And I'm going off of no information that I pulled this out of my butt today.
Yes.
But I thought, you know, if it was going to happen, if it was a return, anything less than that, it's unacceptable.
It would have to be something that you can build around, because, you know, this isn't a team that is one right now. This is a team that's built to win a cup as it stands. It's not like one piece away from taking it over the top and you trade a great player to get a piece. It's not like, oh, we have terrible goaltending, so I'll have to trade a good player to get great goaltending and that will put us over the top. The Sharks are not in that position. Their problem is the top. The problem is their top six, kind of. And if you really want to put this team in a position to win a lot, then you got to probably, you know, that's obviously on paper going to be great. Then you basically have to replace like three of the top six. If you want to say, oh yeah, these guys are just as good as Taves and Kane and Sharp, or these guys are just as good as the Sedins and Burrows and Kessler.
Yeah.
It's like right now the Sharks are definitely a cut below that. And so, you know, making a trade for, you know, Boyle for like a 1 year of, you know, Paul Gostad is stupid.
No, well, you do. Kurz is saying they're looking for another top nine forward, and that, you know, he floated that Boyle's the bait. I mean, what is acceptable there? You know, what's an acceptable return?
I just don't like that idea, period. I don't like the concept of that deal, period. I don't care who it is. The kind of forward that you could get for Boyle being the age he is, and you want a guy to contribute now in the top nine is not a guy that I want.
There's two reasons why you can't do this. One is Brent Burns does not look like Brent Burns. Brent Burns looks like some sewn back together version of Brent Burns that mm-hmm. is not as mobile as he used to be. I haven't seen him do anything offensively, really. I mean, he's been invisible and he needs some more time. Hopefully he's going to get back, you know, to where he was. But this isn't the guy that we saw last year, or even the guy we saw last year is not the guy I think that we thought we were going to get anyways. Mm-hmm. And I still like Brent Burns as a player, and I think he's a good player. But, you know, we need to see more from him offensively. And the second part of this is going back to his question is Jason Demers has little to no trade value right now because mm-hmm. he can't even get in the lineup.
Right.
And when he does, he seems to take a bad penalty or... you know, nail Marlowe with a puck. You know, he just isn't... the last 2 or 3 years, really, for Demers has been extreme highs and extreme lows, you know, to where he was playing in Stockton.
I mean, for real, I think Demers on the open market is a middle-round draft pick.
And like, that...
If we got a third for Demers, I would actually be kind of surprised.
How is that worth it?
It's not.
So I guess that answers your question. Unless you're interested in getting a third, you know, the Sharks are going to eventually have to make a decision about which way this team is going. And I would tend to agree with you, dude. I think Doug Wilson is extremely stubborn and very set in his vision. And if the Titanic is sinking, he's going to stay on the ship and sink with it, with his coach, with his players and all of it. But keep in mind,
let's go back to what, you know, the guys from Puck Prospect have said about this team. There's still a core of this team that doesn't suck, right? We still have Pavelski and Couture and Vlasic and
Burns. These players
individually
don't suck. Marlowe doesn't suck. Thornton doesn't suck. These guys are good players.
I mean, even though we just won a game, let's take this to the worst possible logical conclusion,
right?
Okay? Let's take this to the sinking that you're talking about, this Titanic-like sink. What we're talking about in terms of a Titanic-like sink is we're talking about Thornton and Boyle and Marlowe and, I guess, Stewart, although he signed a 2-year deal, being gone, and Clough being gone and Murray being gone. Okay, so what do we have then? We have a team that has... a not terrible young core of forwards. We still have Havlat, and we still have Couture, and we still have Pavelski. That's not bad. And we have some young defensemen. We have Vlasic and Burns and Braun. That, you know, a lot of teams, that's better than a lot of teams can hope for when they were in their doldrums. So let's not say, this is not like the Sharks are like, you know, 17 and 60 like they were in 92 or
sure.
something.
Dude,
okay?
I think maybe you misunderstood me. Is that what I mean? I think the Titanic like sink for me would be this team going down this year without making any changes, without changing the coach, and just plummeting into an abyss of mediocrity. And I would rather see them make those moves and restock if that's the direction this is going. I'd rather see them do that. I can live with that.
Right.
I think it's getting close to being that time.
I agree.
You know, where I just feel like I know what's going to happen. Like, I feel like we know what's going to happen tomorrow night. Mm-hmm. Watch us be wrong.
Of course.
But, you know, you just feel like we're going to walk into Chicago, who is facing an opportunity to have, right, the most...
Yeah, they set the record for the most.
Or did they beat Vancouver? Is it really the record?
They tied the record. They're going to set it if they gain a point against the Sharks.
So if they beat us, then that's the all-time record in wins?
Well, it's the all-time record in not losing in regulation to start a season, right? So because they did they got a point. They've gotten a point in every single game
against
they have not
a team
lost
that just has general ownership over us.
Yeah.
Except for when they had the cup hangover.
Right.
When we had, you know, brief ownership on them. I don't know. I just don't see that going well. And one last thing, dude, before
okay.
we go.
Okay.
Okay. Going back to that first Chicago game, when the Sharks were down 3-0, right? right? Didn't they go?
We were up 3-0.
No. I'm sorry. The second Chicago game.
Oh,
the one that happened last week.
Yeah.
Weren't they down 3-0 and then Marlowe scores? And they all kind of blurs together. Yeah. They lost that game 4-1.
Yeah.
Do you know for sure?
I'm pretty sure. I'm just going to say yeah.
The thing that made me really upset is that night I had bet on the Vancouver-Dallas game, and I took Vancouver to win by 2. And Vancouver races out to a 3-1 lead. The Sedin sets, you know, the all-time Vancouver scoring record. They're throwing a huge party in Vancouver.
Mm-hmm.
And off the face-off, after this giant celebration, one of the Dallas players, I don't even know his name, fights Volpatti, just drops the gloves right off the face-off and has a huge fight with Volpatti. And then, you know, that kind of, you know, the crowd is still excited.
Mm-hmm.
Off the next face-off, Vernon Fiddler fights LaPierre.
Mm-hmm.
All right, that's over. They go to drop the puck again. Eric Nystrom fights someone else. 3 back-to-back-to-back fights. Dallas was embarrassed and humiliated by what had happened. They fought back-to-back-to-back fights, and they won that game. I want to see a little bit of that from this team. Where was that against the Chicago game where they again just sort of rolled over and took it?
Yeah.
And when it was, you know, in the Columbus game, when you go to Columbus and they beat you 6-2 in the last 5 minutes, you better be taking some names.
Yeah. Instead, they put the lotion in the basket.
It puts the lotion.
Put the lotion on the skin or else it gets the hose again.
Precious. Come here, Precious.
The Sharks put the lotion in the basket. They did.
Rub the lotion on your skin.
I'm sorry I did that. I'm sorry I started this. Actually, no, I'm not. I'm not sorry at all. But I did I did completely derail this conversation.
You know, once I start this, I guess
I know you can't start.
It's Buffalo Bill.
Dude, are we stopping?
No.
Oh, okay.
How long have we been going?
We've been going long enough.
Dude, I've got more to say.
Wait, there was one more thing. Oh, I did want to talk about... So, is Bob Murray really the dumbest GM ever? I just want to end with that. He gave him a 2-year deal after 9 games. The guy's 30 years old. Oh,
see, I don't even think he's the dumbest GM because of that. I think he's even dumber because he hired Brian Burke to come work for him.
I know.
So... when Bob Murray makes the next dumbest mistake,
he's going to be gone.
He's going to get fired, and Brian Burke's going to take his job. I mean, can't anyone else see this coming a mile away?
That's true. You're right. That is of the two things he did this week, signing Victor Foss to a 2-year deal actually might be the less dumber thing. You're right. I didn't even think about that.
That is so dumb. I loved hearing
It's like Mike Yeo. It's like Mike Yeo hiring Scotty Bowman to be his assistant coach. He's like, what could possibly go wrong? I'm going to be fine.
They were talking about this on Merrick versus Wyshynski, I think, where, you know, Scott Housen was like, hey, ownership, great idea. Let's bring in John Davidson to be president. It was his idea. And then John Davidson comes in and then he cans Housen.
Yeah, of course.
And brings in his own guy. Like,
yeah.
What just happened? Wait, right. What happened? You know, like Jay Feaster being an assistant
right.
to the GM. You can see that coming a mile away. This just...
It's hilarious.
It's going to happen.
Funny, though, that they signed... But they signed this goaltender. I mean, he's been great in the Swiss League. Whoop-de-doo. But he's 30 years old and he has 9 games of experience. I mean, to me, this is like the Antti Niemi signing to the 10th power. Like, Antti Niemi had... some history, not a lot.
You won a Stanley Cup, dude.
But he was like right on the peak of the very next season. He was playing great. And then we signed him to a 4-year deal. And, you know, it's been a little ups and downs since then.
It looks pretty up right now.
It's looking great right now. But Victor Foss is like, let's wait till he's like 8-0 or 9-0. And then we'll sign him to this deal. It's like, where else can the kid go but down? I mean, there's no way he's going to live up to this.
In this moment right now, when I think about the Sharks, going back to our team, dude. And I think about the penalty kill has improved.
Yeah.
The goaltending has been good.
Yeah.
Defensively, this team is way better. I think they're either tops or in the top 5 in goals allowed. But offensively, not good.
Yeah.
In the last eight games.
Terrible.
And power play, not good.
Terrible.
So aren't the two things that the head coach is supposed to specialize in the two worst things about this team?
Yes.
So then why even hesitate? If you're going to play that style this year, if that's what we're going to go for, and so, I'm okay with that.
So you want to take the two... Okay, so... But this doesn't make any sense to me. So we have a coach that is supposedly good at offense in the power play, and we're not very good at those right now.
Right.
So you want to bring in a defensive coach who's also even worse at those two things and expect those two things to get
better? No, those two things already suck. So you just get even better at the two things that are good.
You think that's... I mean, you can't win 2-1 every night. It's just not possible.
Sure you can. Sure you can.
Man, you need goal differential, man. I don't believe in these one goal game things, because one goal games, if you look at one goal game records year to year, they're not consistent. Like a team will go 15-7 in one goal games 1 year, and then they'll go 5-12 the next year in one goal games.
I get real hot and cold on this, because part of me goes, you know, I look at the guys on the ice and how can McClellan be responsible for them? Like, look like they're phoning it in half the time.
Right.
Some of this roster. I mean, he can't go out there and play for them. So on that hand, and who knows what's going on? You know, if they have completely tuned him out, if this is a Ron Wilson type situation, or is this team just going through a stretch of bad luck? I say one more week, dude. If we're here talking and being bitchy and moany and grumpy pants.
Yeah.
Next week, then the end is coming close.
I'll give it 2 weeks.
Yeah. Okay. Well, we'll see where we are. Hopefully, you're all still listening and you haven't medicated yourself in some way. But this is, you know, even despite the win, we agree. It's just still kind of not good times right now for the San Jose Sharks.
But still, go Sharks.
Go Sharks.
Show? Want to get your questions on the air? Email questions at dudesonhockey.com. Dudes on Hockey is not affiliated with the San Jose Sharks organization or the National Hockey League.